All right, everyone, it's the Grimlord, and this is Grimm's... Sorry, guys, I had a water incident.
But a water incident?
That's
not a good thing to say over a radio...
podcast, whatever you want to call it. But okay, guys. It's the Grimlord here,
like Biden saying he had a water incident over the airwaves.
I wet my pants.
I saw a thing about Jerry Adler shitting his pants. There video footage of him on there with what's her name that nobody likes from California.
What's her name? AOC?
No, she's New York.
She's New York.
It's the one that stepped down as she tore Trump's speech up at the last.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, she's up there talking. And he's trying to scoot his ass off stage, and the camera guy just pans out to keep him in the thing. He's trying to get on stage. You can tell he shit his pants. He's trying to get off stage. But he's moving slow and wobbling back and forth.
We didn't have that kind of water incident. But all right, guys, it's the Grimlord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. I got Dead Penetration.
What's
here.
What's up?
And we're going to talk about Hitler. No, literally. I was a CIA agent. There is growing proof that Hitler faked his death, and I think I know where he was hiding.
Like my time on the show here is built up to this one moment. What? Hitler, you say?
A former CIA agent claims there's a growing body of evidence showing that Adolf Hitler faked his own death in Germany and actually escaped to Argentina, where followers tried to reboot his fallen Nazi empire. Bob Baer, who spent his 21-year career in espionage, says the official version of history, with Hitler dying by suicide in 1945, might need rethinking once anticipated bombshell evidence is released.
I know what day that was.
Hold on. There's different versions of this. Alright, so hold on. There's one where they... Whoops. This might be archived. Alright, here we go. He expects a forthcoming set of documents out of Argentina to reveal possible entanglements between the fascist dictator and the South American government that may have been hiding him. Baer, 72, believes the archives on Nazis who fled to Argentina after the war may spotlight efforts to build a Fourth Reich in South America and implicate Argentinian officials in the support of Nazis, money laundering schemes, and more. Because, of course, there's always more. He's anticipating a paper or money trail pointing to both Argentinian government involvement in the construction of a possible Nazi hideout in the Misiones province, which was uncovered in a 2015 archaeological dig, and President Juan Perón's backing of a 1950s nuclear fusion lab headed by a Nazi scientist on a remote island. We don't yet know when Argentinian officials plan to release the findings, but we do know this idea of Hitler's escape has been examined for decades. Even the Eisenhower administration took the Topfenführer's possible survival seriously, Baer says. In the 2015 History Channel Hunting Hitler, Baer and others floated theories about Hitler's escape and of Nazi stragglers regrouping with the help of sympathetic South American leaders. Look at this. It says... University of Buenos Aires archaeologists unearthed the remains of what they call a hideout in 2015. The remains of the three-building Nazi hideout is in Teyuquerre Park near San Ignacio in the northeastern province of Mission. And look at this. Yeah. Archaeologists found this German coin from 1938 and the remains of a house built inside Teyuquerre Park. So even if Hitler himself did not escape to Argentina,
a lot of Nazis there.
Yes. He pointed to the Mission's discoveries, the most interesting find related to the story so far. Lots of money was spent on a compound with plumbing and electricity in the middle of nowhere, Baer told the Daily Mail, adding Nazi memorabilia, including German World War II era coins, was found in the area. If you were going to hide Hitler, that's where you'd do it. Historians broadly agree that newlyweds Hitler and Eva Braun died by suicide in the leader's underground Führer bunker in April 1945 as Soviet forces advanced on Berlin. Their bodies were partially burned and buried in a shallow bomb crater. Once exhumed, Soviet officials identified both Hitler and Braun through dental records. Both of their remains were held in East Germany before the Soviet Union's Committee for State Security, KGB, destroyed Hitler's in 1970. They saved only a jawbone and skull, which were taken to Moscow. Meanwhile, thousands of Nazi war criminals and collaborators, including Holocaust planner Adolf Eichmann and the angel of death Josef Mengele, fled to South America along rat lines, escape routes. Shortly after Hitler's death, theories emerged that he had actually escaped instead, perhaps through a tunnel, a flight to the Canary Islands, and then aboard a submarine to South America. While the theories were initially largely dismissed, they were taken more seriously in 2009, when DNA tests showed the skull fragment that was thought to have belonged to Hitler and was preserved in Moscow for decades actually belonged to a woman between 20 and 40 years old. Bear calls this confusion one of these great mysteries in history that we'll never get a complete answer for. But, well, I mean, you can see.
Even if he did make it to South America, he wasn't healthy. You know, he'd gotten damaged by the nerve agents during World War One. He is a messenger, or, you know, where they deliver messages to people on the front lines and all that. But he'd gotten, he'd gotten damaged from mustard gas.
They found that in Buenos Aires.
Well, yeah. Doesn't mean he's there.
Well, it's really not him, but somebody.
It could have been their backup plan.
Yes.
They could have been preparing for it.
Separately, in early April, CIA files that were declassified in 2017 resurfaced. One shows how in 1955, the agency was sent a photo of a Hitler lookalike taken in Colombia. It suggested that Hitler may have been living in South America under an assumed identity a decade after the fall of Nazi Germany.
I wonder if he learned Portuguese.
A second file titled Hitler Hideout in Argentina from 1945 describes a spa hotel in La Falda, Argentina, owned by friends and supporters of Hitler, where he could have fled had he survived the war. Still, the CIA has also released an autopsy that confirms Hitler's death by suicide in the bunker. While skeptical agents in 1955 said they could spend enormous efforts probing the Columbia sighting with only remote possibilities of establishing anything concrete, Bear thinks the fact that it was even probed at all suggests that survival was at the very least considered possible by officials in Washington. The CIA is not run by the curiosity of officers in the field, Bear said. If 10 years after the end of the war, the CIA is considering these reports, whether people believe them or not, it shows there was a belief in the executive branch of the U.S. government that Hitler may have gotten away. Bear hopes there will be more questions answered by the upcoming archive release. One document stated that officials were convinced he would seek refuge in Argentina if he ever left Germany. So they knew. A photo secretly stolen by U.S. agents revealed a man who former Nazis claimed was Hitler still alive in 1954, in Colombia. Certainly does look like him. I mean, you wouldn't think he would have got rid of that mustache.
You know, one time when I was shaving, I did my mustache like that, and I combed my hair just right, and I look like Hitler. Doesn't mean I guarantee, and I doubt I look like Hitler.
Right.
Once you look, comparison, he just shows similar traits to someone. He has the same fashion sense as Hitler.
U.S. intelligence agents followed this trail for 10 years despite evidence that Hitler allegedly killed himself and had his body burned. President Javier Milei authorized the document's declassification after a February meeting with officials at the Simon Wiesenthal Center who want records on the rat lines used by some 10,000 fleeing Nazis and other fascist war criminals. Many are known to have escaped through Germany into Spain and Italy before crossing the Atlantic to the Americas. In some cases, U.S. spies plucked Nazi scientists from the rat lines to join their military research programs in the Cold War. Bear also hopes to see, that's Operation Paperclip. Bear also hopes to see information on the nuclear lab on Wemul Island near Mariloche, where Nazi scientists tried to harness fusion energy for Perón. The ex-CIA agent thinks it's possible there were legitimate attempts at a Fourth Reich with plans including a nuclear weapons strike on Manhattan. Dr. John Senchich, a former UN war crimes investigator who worked with Bear on the TV series, is more cautious. Dr. Senchich says he doubts the relocated Nazis ever got close to resurrecting their Reich. Many of them were still marching to the tune of Hitler and maybe didn't believe that Hitler was dead, he told Daily Mail. But these were just demoralized former Nazis who were living in the past and who'd fled there for safety from criminal prosecution. Yep. Very interesting.
What? Snoop Dogg is a rabbit suit?
This is archived, so this is all old. Not that old, but it's as old as April 20th.
Old as
420.
420.
Yeah. Told you we had some old articles for you guys. Okay. United States will ban 8 artificial food dyes in sweeping change to popular snacks.
All right.
The United States plans on banning 8 artificial food dyes in a sweeping change to many of America's most popular snacks. United States Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., alongside Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Marty McCary, revealed details about this plan on Tuesday afternoon, April 22nd. In a press conference, McCary announced that the U.S. is establishing a national standard and timeline for the food industry to transition from using the artificial dyes, as well as creating a process to revoke authorization of synthetic food coloring in the coming weeks. On top of that, McCary revealed that the FDA plans on phasing out remaining synthetic dyes, including Red 40, thank you, by the end of next year. That's what gave me ADD. The massive overhaul is part of the doctors told my parents early on to not give me anything with red dye because it would cause hyperactivity.
Have sweets until I was 2 or mm-hmm. 3. I was diagnosed at 3.
Yeah.
And it was like when ADD and ADHD were first getting recognized.
It hit hard. That dye was really, yeah. I mean, because your brain was still developing.
Well, before then, I was eating all, of course, mm-hmm. the baby food they probably had.
Yeah.
Had heavy metals in it and everything
true.
Else.
True. This knows? Massive overhaul is part of RFK Jr.'s Make America Healthy Again initiative, a commission task. Actually, the baby food was a lot healthier back then. A lot
it
of the food
was
a lot healthier. Now it has all the heavy metals and stuff.
That ain't good.
I
think they should really work on that.
Well, they're going to that's why we got him in there.
Yep.
A commission tasked with investigating the root causes of America's escalating health crisis. As per the Associated Press, this is a process that usually requires a public announcement and an internal review, marking a massive shift in how these changes are usually brought about. The U.S. has officially banned all artificial dyes in food, effective immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And it says it's not clear yet what enforcement mechanism Kennedy will seek to implement the new changes. At the time of the writing, the Food and Drug Administration allows for 36 additives, which include the 8 synthetic petroleum-based dyes that are now on the chopping block. The petroleum-based dyes are the ones that need to go. I've got a friend of mine that is a chemist and works with these dyes, and he works with 10 kilograms worth of quality. That's a lot more than what's in the food.
Yeah.
And this stuff is extremely, extremely dangerous. He said, look, I'm going to tell you something. Before I started working at this lab, I never looked at the ingredients of food. But now that I know what all this shit does, I won't even touch it. The latest change comes after the FDA announced its plans to phase out Red 3 and food and drugs. Red 3 and Blue 3 are bad, and green. You don't need the red, blue, and green. Yellow is only if you're allergic, so I'm kind of good when it comes to yellow. Yellow doesn't affect me, but the ones that you do need to worry about are red, blue,
luckily,
and green.
Luckily, they're all going to be gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't have to find out later something was shitty.
Yeah, Red 3 and food and drugs by 2028. Due to studies reportedly showing that coloring caused cancer in lab rats. Red 3 is the bad one. Since then, the government has opted to take the rest of them out, which is good. The FDA is taking action that will remove the authorization for the use of FD&C Red number 3 in food and ingested drugs. Yeah, it's in your fucking pills, too. Jim Jones, the FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Human Food, said earlier this year. Evidence shows cancer in laboratory rats exposed to high levels of FD&C red number 3. Importantly, the way that FD&C red number 3 causes cancer in male rats does not occur in humans, but we still need to get it off. The dye was banned in cosmetics 35 years ago, and after years of petitioning from health advocates, it has finally been prohibited in both food and medicine. About fucking time. Good news. We have good news to report for you guys. Okay, we've got a marriage psychologist who reveals the number one sign of a future separation with 94% accuracy. If you want to know whether your marriage is heading for Splitsville, don't check your partner's phone. Check their face. A one-sided mouth raise. The subtle smirk of superiority might just be the number one red flag for divorce, according to renowned psychologist John Gottman, the founder of the Gottman Institute and the mastermind behind one of the most extensive marriage studies ever conducted. His research, which was recently dissected on the hit The Unplanned podcast, found that four nasty little habits, criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling, are deemed the four horsemen of the apocalypse when it comes to doom relationships. But it's contempt, experts warn, that is the true kiss of death. John Gottman is a marriage and family counselor, and he did the largest marriage experiment ever done, body language Vanessa Van Edwards recently told hosts Matt and Abby Howard. He brought couples into his lab, and if one member of the couple shows a one-sided mouth raise towards the other, he can tell you if they're going to get divorced. Because he's looking for contempt, she noted. And he knows his stuff. Gottman could predict divorce with an astonishing 93.6% accuracy, Van Edwards added. Contempt, Van Edwards explained, is the most corrosive of all emotional saboteurs. Fear comes in a burst, and then you calm down. Happiness comes, and then you go back to normal. Anger comes, and then you calm down, she said. But not contempt. If you feel scorn or disdain for someone else, and if it is not addressed, it festers and it grows. Remember, this is from a 93% accuracy marriage dude. Okay? So if he says that this is the number one fucking reason that people divorce with a 93.6% accuracy, you better damn well believe it. If your partner is feeling scorn or disdain for you, or you're feeling disdain from them, then yeah, that needs to be addressed or your marriage will end up in divorce. She went on noting, that is why at the end of a marriage you have two people who can't even look at each other.
Well, also when you trust someone and they break that trust, it's way worse than if someone you're just acquaintances with does it.
Right. Van Edwards suggested that if you catch a whiff of contempt, either from yourself or your partner, it's time to tackle it head on. Ask, what's going on? Are you okay? What are you feeling? I want to be here for it. Because then you're giving air to whatever that contempt is so that it can be addressed, she said. And then you can either fix it or become the enemy against it. She also believes that many couples get stuck in endless loops of the same three arguments and just don't realize it. You have to sit with your partner and figure out what are your basic root level three arguments, she advised. That way, when you're in an argument, even if you feel like you still disagree, you can say, this is argument number two. We're in a stalemate on this one. Clinical psychologist David M. Schneer backed up Gottman's findings in a 2019 article, writing, disgust and contempt are to a relationship what gasoline and matches are to a fire. He cited telltale signs like eye rolling, mouth crimping, and even subtle fidgeting like picking at clothes or cleaning fingers mid-convo as silent signals of disdain. Schneer dubbed this move the lint picker, a behavior that he says screams contempt louder than words ever could. So how do you douse the flames before they torch your love life? Schneer recommended cracking a joke. Switching the topic to something you both enjoy or simply walking away to cool off if the situation gets too toxic. Love may be blind, but contempt, it's written all over your face. So fortunate to have met my wife in high school. We matured and grew up together, and 46 years later, we're still as crazy as ever about each other. Has the idea of finishing college, getting established in a career, and then focusing on marriage work? Are we focusing on what will make us happy in the long run? Same here. There's a lot to be said for maturing together. No, I think it's seeing a marriage counselor. More than 98% of couples who do eventually divorce. I don't think
we need to get someone else involved.
No. He's saying that seeing a marriage counselor is usually a good sign. 98% of couples who see a marriage counselor do divorce.
Yeah, well, the marriage counselor, too, usually seems to take the woman's side.
I tried. My wife stopped because the counselor kept agreeing with me. My ex-wife displayed these four signs in the article. Whenever I'd be talking to my late mom, trying to get her to understand something, which at times sounded like I was talking to a two-year-old, my wife would walk around the house verbalizing about how I was talking to my mom. And yet when she talked to her own mother, she'd talk to her in the same way that I did to my mom. The major difference is that I respected my wife's space and privacy and acknowledged that how she spoke to her mom was not open to my editorializing. My ex was also incredibly defensive. During our divorce and with the help of a counselor, I realized that my wife was a narcissist. I've never had a good grasp of the condition, but when my counselor asked me if she exhibited the signs mentioned in the article, and I said yes, she said, "Your wife is a classic narcissist." She went on to say that one of the classic signs of a narcissist's behavior is the narcissist's absolute refusal to admit they're wrong, that they made a mistake, or that they're overreacting. All three of these personality traits were present with my ex. Her wandering eye, which I came to realize much later she had, sealed the deal that divorcing her was the right thing. The main issue is that her wanting out of the marriage came almost after 40 years of marriage. During our divorce, I discovered that she was not only cheating on me currently, but that she'd also been cheating on me during our engagement with a married man that she was involved with when we met. 40 years ago. It was only until she gave him an ultimatum that he said he would not leave his wife for her that I became her next best option. If I had known then what I know now, I would have asked for an annulment. It's hard to get back almost 40 years of your life that have been wasted with someone who never really loved you. And as an incredibly gifted, deceptive person, my ex-wife fooled every one of my friends and my entire family. What a shame. That's insane. I mean, the real stories, man, that's what hits.
Oh, yeah.
That's, you know, there's a bunch of guys on the internet. There's this one guy. He's not really, like, I guess you could say kind of a MGTOW, but they don't call themselves that anymore. He's just an older guy. Divorced, and he talks about the issues with modern women. Now, I'm sure there's probably a lot of guys on MGTOW.TV, obviously, that do the same, but I haven't seen this guy's videos on there, and I've seen him on Facebook a lot, and I've noticed a lot of other guys, older, these are all older men, remember, these are men in their 50s, they're all graying, and they're talking about the same things. That their partner, you know, they're not saying that they're a little upset. But they're upset about the years wasted, right? And they're glad that they're single and able to do things, right?
Because women do better after divorce, being on their own. Men
right.
try to find someone else.
But from what we see, there's a lot of... Well, I think it takes a real bad divorce to get a man to reach that stage. Okay. And unfortunately, a lot of men have to go through that. So, okay. Netflix's Ted Sarandos says that theatrical experience is an outmoded idea for most people, and claims that Netflix is saving Hollywood. As today, if amid shrieking theatrical windows, sagging box office receipts, and production fleeing L.A., Netflix has destroyed Hollywood, the company's co-CEO Ted Sarandos replied, "No, we're saving Hollywood." Sarandos made the remarks at the Time 100 Summit. He went on to describe Netflix as a very consumer-focused company. "We deliver the program to you in the way you want to watch it." Referring to declining box office, he asked rhetorically, "What is the consumer trying to tell us?" He then answered his own question, that they like to watch movies at home. Of the communal aspect of theatrical moviegoing, the Netflix honcho admitted he loved theaters, but said of the experience, "I believe that it is an outmoded idea for most people, not for everybody." Sarandos also addressed comments he made earlier in the day at Semaphore's World Economy Summit about hurdles that entertainment companies often face, even without President Trump's tariff regimes, that go beyond those that other industries face, among them quotas and co-production requirements in China. "What I'm saying is, it's often that the entertainment industry doesn't get treated like a real business, and that's one example of it." "I think it's lazy to blame Netflix for the struggles of movie theaters. Cheap, huge flat-screen TVs, high-speed internet, and offering without commercials, heck, even DoorDash, have all contributed to making the at-home movie experience compete with movie theaters. A single movie playing in movie theaters worldwide can make up to $500 million in 3 days. There's no way Netflix can say that a single movie can make that much money streaming on Netflix in just 3 days." Unfathomable, but he's spot on. This town, from this publication to every other entertainment rag and podcast, is completely focused on the Hollywood that's already dead. There's a pervasive sentiment in all these that soon people will come back to the cinema, and the oddly order will be restored. It's just been a series of unfortunate events stopping them, like COVID and the strikes. Get realistic, it's never coming back, just like Ted already knows. And the sooner this town realizes that, starts creating content to meet people where they are, the better. We have to let it go. It's over. I don't know what the future is. There might not even be one for scripted content. But I sure know it isn't going to come back in the form of people going to the cinema. Cinema is exactly like vinyl now. We'll always be there, we'll always have a set of hardcore enthusiasts, but it's no longer a mass forum. Just accept that and make entertainment in another form."
Easy for you to say.
"The future of movie theaters has been glimpsed with Wicked and Minecraft. Turns out, people do like the social aspect of theaters for certain things. Singing along, yelling and screaming, throwing popcorn, getting the cops to show up. Yes, all those things happen. Maybe theaters didn't think they were in that business, but hey, they're selling tickets. They just need to hire more ushers to clean up the mess. And yes, it has been ridiculous."
That sounds like shit. You should at least have some proper etiquette.
Well, here's the thing. They had this...
If I'm paying that much to watch a movie and someone's disturbing it, I'm ready to beat someone's fucking ass.
Now, listen. Okay, so I'm going to tell you why this happened. The Minecraft thing has a chicken jockey character, and it's a real big thing for the Minecraft community. So every time the chicken jockey character shows up in the movie, the kids throw all their popcorn and soda and just throw it into the air.
That sounds justifiable to me.
I know that. But what I'm saying is,
start bringing my belt.
And
to
they
the
made
movie theater and they, beat some kids straight.
And they made so much money that they're putting Minecraft in as a meme event, which means the kids are going to be even more rowdy than they were the first time.
Luckily, I'm not going to see Minecraft, but the damage it causes to the
and the
equipment and the seats, everything.
We can
not justify what the tickets cost.
We can actually look at.
You know, movie theaters hardly make any money off the movies themselves. They mainly make it off of the food.
Movie theaters cleaning up messes. There we go.
if someone throws an $18 thing of popcorn at me, I'm beating the shit out of them.
They had to on April 15th. Now I wanted to see what the actual the movie star had to come across it. Let's see what it looks like. No?
Oh.
I wanted to see. Oh, here we go.
That's where you go.
Here we go. Look. Look. There it is. Oh, they actually had to do that because they had to do that because the kids went nuts. The kids went nuts. Minecraft theater damage. I want to see if we can actually see it. Trashed. Minecraft movie destroys theaters. No, that's not what we wanted. It should be. Has trashed the thing. Okay, here we go. Here's what we need to see. Alright, now look.
Turn the music down or turn
yeah,
the
music down. Okay.
First reporter Joshua Skinner visited the Springs Cinema and Tap House in Sandy Springs today to talk with employees who had it happen to them.
You know, my favorite part of going to the movies is the popcorn for the community. But likely some people.
Oh, here we go. They're going to show it.
Either. This bloodbath is not what you want to see when you walk
Jesus.
Into a movie theater.
This is just in no way okay.
But it's what the Springs Cinema and Tap House owner Grant Gully has been dealing with over the past week.
Just involved into being an absolute mess.
The trashing is happening during a Minecraft movie, and it's happening across the country. Kids, mostly teenage boys, taking part in a social media trend where they wait for a certain line near the end of the film and then throw everything all over each other.
Started with popcorn, and then it evolved into throwing ices, pouring bottles of water on people.
Brandt says some people have even thrown glass bottles and salsa. It's definitely not what do everything employees do.
Salsa? I want to go to that theater.
It's a bit dreadful, if I'm being honest.
He's the one who has to clean up these messes. And while a Monday afternoon is easy, a Friday night is definitely not.
They don't pay him enough.
Usually 20 minutes or less. The Springs has had to delay showings, provide refunds, and even call the cops due to the mayhem.
If you're not a 12, 14-year-old boy, you don't find throwing food all over each other to be particularly funny.
Employees are now posted in Minecraft showings for quicker response, and warnings are given before the shows even start.
I have a solution.
Really, how hard is
maybe
it
a
to
final
in a bucket
solution?
Or an IC in your cup?
Get rid of these 12-year-olds.
And babysit people while they're inside watching a movie.
At the movies, Joshua Skinner.
Yeah, I'll be as respectful as you can.
Atlanta News First.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I make you sick.
That's...
I guarantee you. Now, luckily, I don't feel like I'm going to see a lot of 12, 13-year-old boys at the movies I watch.
Right.
But you,
you won't see any. No,
yeah, they don't allow kids in porn theaters. At least 18. No. Yeah, the movies, you'd have to be accompanied by adults anyway. Which I'd like, how are they getting to the movies? Their parents. And I said, if I was their parents, like, you wreck this theater, I'm beating the living dog shit out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it. Parents, don't discipline them. Go to your room with all your video games and all that shit. That'll teach you.
Oh, yeah. It's like the most delicious irony imaginable. Oh, no. My old man would take everything out. and the most delicious irony imaginable. The notorious early 2000s, you wouldn't steal a car anti-piracy campaign may have used an illegal font, and no one noticed for 21 years. There's an infamous anti-piracy advertisement from back in 2004 that online oldsters will immediately recognize. You wouldn't steal a car, it begins, complete with a shaky cam footage of some sketchy-looking dude popping a lock, before rolling into various other types of theft and eventually equating it with all with downloading a copy of Shrek 2. The ad makes it dramatically clear. Stealing Shrek will get you hard time in the slam where you're inevitably busted for your criminal ways. You've likely seen this, but just in case, let me be perfectly clear. This is not parody. It was, and is, overwrought and silly, and so of course it inspired numerous parodies and memes. The British comedy series The It Crowd did a particularly good one a few years after the original aired. In fact, the old URL, piracyisacrime.com, now directs to the IT Crowd clip on YouTube. I urge you to watch it. The ad itself was only around for a short time, but you wouldn't download a car, has endured in shitpost form for decades. It's practically embedded in the fabric of the internet at this point. Also, it turns out that some of you would absolutely download a car if you could. But as good as many of these parodies are, none are as ridiculous and funny as the recent discovery that the world's best-known anti-piracy ad may have used a pirated font. The distinctive font used in the ad appears to be FF Confidential, created by Just Von Rossum in 1992. But there's another font called X-Band Rough that's virtually identical. And when journalist Melissa Lewis reached out to Van Rossum about it, he told her X-Band Rough is an illegal clone of FF Confidential. This is where it gets interesting. After all this, another Blue Sky user named Rib used the Font Forge tool on a PDF file from the old anti-piracy campaign available via the Wayback Machine and discovered the file in question uses the X-Band Rough font, not the clone. Wow. I checked it myself, and it's sure enough the embedded font in the PDF comes up as X-Band Rough and not FF Confidential. To be clear, this isn't proof of some deeply buried wrongdoing. It's entirely possible the campaign's graphic designers had no clue the font was a clone of an existing work. But the irony of a hard-ass anti-piracy campaign making use of an unlicensed knockoff font, well, it's hard to overlook. Luckily, Van Rossum, the creator of the FF Confidential font the campaign didn't use, thinks it's all very funny. I knew my font was used for the campaign and that a pirated clone named X-Band Rough existed, Van Rossum told Torn Freak. I did not know that this campaign used X-Band Rough and not FF Confidential, though. So this fact is... Whoops, didn't need that. This fact is new to me and I find it hilarious. He also said he has no intention of pursuing the matter further. Pretty funny. I'm so attractive I have to wear a fake wedding ring in public just to keep
finally
men...
Finally somebody can relate.
Just to keep men from flirting with me, right?
I know. And I keep telling them I'm straight, but they don't fucking listen.
She put a ring on it. A sizzling hot model claims to have so many issues with men trying to engage with her that she's taken to wearing a fake wedding band. Influencer Drew Eisen insisted that the easiest way to avoid unwanted attention has been to slide the bogus bling on her finger before leaving the home. The Brazilian beauty.
That's pretty much what she is.
That's what she is. The Brazilian booty, who boasts 2.6 million Instagram followers.
What? There's a head connected to it? Oh, shit.
Alleged that male suitors would approach her everywhere she went. The gym, supermarket, pharmacy, and even her local swimming pool. I was tired of the constant approaches. It was nonstop, even when I clearly wasn't interested. Eisen, who is currently single, told Need to Know. So I put a sample ring on my left hand, and it was like hitting a mute button, the 39-year-old declared. The faux token of affection acts as a sign to these men that she's not available. Even if it's not real, it is a deterrent to being approached, she explained. It's worked for years. It's just visible enough to keep people from coming up to me.
You know, the bad part is, if she ever is interested, she's going to have to make the first move.
Yep. She's added that as soon as she started wearing a ring on her finger, guys started looking at her differently, and now they think twice before saying anything. It has influenced how I'm treated in places like the gym or bars, she professed.
You know what's funny is if a guy puts a wedding ring on,
yeah, he gets attention.
Women turn it up even more.
Eisen recalled one time she was at the pharmacy when a guy started making small talk with her, but his demeanor shifted when he saw the ring.
And you know why that is. Women know someone else found a quality guy. They want the quality guy.
Right. He asked if I was married. He asked if I was married. I just smiled and he said, got it, sorry, and walked away, she shared. It was respectful and I got to keep my peace. The model and influencer said that she started wearing the ring on her finger when she was just 23 years old, and now it's become part of her routine. It's not about tricking anyone. It's about setting boundaries. It's a quiet way of saying I'm not available for this kind of interaction, Eisen explained. And the most interesting part? It still works. While she still wears the ring to this day, she did take a break from it a couple years ago, though she noticed the attention from male prospects wasn't as strong as it had been before the break. Something she believes has to do with the rise of dating apps. Men today no longer have the initiative they once had. It's like they're unmotivated, she observed. Even the bad pickup lines
women
that used
killed it.
Yep. Even the bad pickup lines that used to annoy me have become rare. Eisen asserted that technology killed flirting. Nowadays, everyone just waits for a match on a dating app. No one makes eye contact, no one approaches naturally anymore. And that makes relationships feel more empty and mechanical, she expressed. Regardless, she continues to wear the ring to avoid flirtatious men, and she doesn't miss the attention. At least not that kind of attention, she clarified. I prefer peace. If a man is really interested, he'll have to go beyond the obvious. And if I'm interested too, I'll just explain that I'm not actually married. The ring has become more than just an accessory. It's a filter.
I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I guess if you like women that look like they're in their 50s. Are there any attractive women in their 50s? For sure. But to say that she's fighting off men when there are plenty of beautiful 20 and 30-somethings out there?
Oh, is she in her 50s?
No.
Yeah.
But he's saying that she looks like she's in her 50s when she's got...
She does look a little aged. I wouldn't say 50s.
No.
I'd say maybe 30s, early 40s.
Yeah. Something like that.
Of course, I've seen women in their 50s that look gorgeous.
Yeah.
But they look like they're 50. But I still hit them up. I'm like, yeah, I'll give them a ride around the track.
Young men and women are taking the gender gap to staggering new levels. The gulf between Gen Z men and women on political cultural issues is far wider than in older generations. The split between men and women is one of the starkest divisions in American politics right now. And that divide and deepest is Gen Z, which is taking the traditional gender gap in American politics and stretching it even further. New data from NBC News Tune poll, powered by SurveyMonkey, shows that debates over Donald Trump, Elon Musk, immigration, and the state of the country drive the most division between Gen Z men and women. But it's not just pure politics propelling the pronounced gender gap. Big divides exist on policy issues like abortion and broader value questions, too. In large part, the driver is Gen Z women, who are more likely to identify as Democrats and take the liberal position in questions across the poll when compared to other generations or the U.S. population as a whole. And the effects of that dramatic split could define American politics for decades if it continues. Take Trump's approval rating. Among all adults, 45% say they approve of Trump's job performance and 55% disapprove. Adults between the ages of 18 and 29 grade the president worse than that. 34% approve and 66% disapprove. But the difference between young men and women is significant. While 45% of young men approve of Trump's job...
Men think things through, women don't.
Yeah, while 45% of young men approve of Trump's job performance, only 24% of young women do. A 21-point difference.
Because we can't kill babies.
Gender gaps mark every generation, but they aren't as stark elsewhere. There's only a 7-point gap on Trump's approval rating between men and women 65 years and older, and a 13-point gap among those between the ages of 45 and 64, and a 9-point gap among the 30 to 44-year-olds. The survey's large sample includes 2,230 respondents, ages 18 and 29, with a margin of error of plus or minus 2.7 percentage points among that cohort.
Yeah.
There is a similar extra-wide gap between Gen Z men and women on their views on Trump's handling of immigration, as well as on their views of billionaire White House advisor and Musk. Musk is viewed favorably by 41% of all adults and unfavorably by 59%. But while Gen Z men are about in line with the national population, with 43% viewing him favorably, just 23% of Gen Z women view Musk favorably. The negative views of Trump and Musk underscore how Democratic-leaning women are leaning younger women are compared to younger men. What's more, young women are more likely to align with progressive wing of the Democratic Party. A slight majority of Gen Z women, 52%, say they consider themselves to be Democrats, the largest concentration of any age and gender group within one political party. Among Gen Z men, one-third say they're Democrats. Meanwhile, 38% of Gen Z men identify as Republican, compared to 20% of Gen Z women. The partisan gender gap is wider among Gen Z than in any other generation. Gen Z women are also more pessimistic about the direction of the country. 40% of all adults say America's on the right track, right in line with 37% of men between the ages of 18 to 29 who agree, but just 20% of Gen Z women feel the same. The stark political divide between Gen Z men and women, rather, comes alongside other notable splits, from how this generation consumes news and information to how it's processing a slew of cultural issues differently than older generations. We don't really need that. Around a third of young men, 37%, say they are extremely proud to be an American, double the share of young women who say the same. And a higher share of young women, 22%, say they are not at all proud to be American, compared to 13% of young men. By comparison, majorities of both men and women over 65 say they are extremely proud to be Americans. Well, I wonder why. While that question is uniquely American, the growing gender divide between young people is not. Pollsters, social scientists, and politicians have observed it happening across other countries in recent years, raising broader questions about global culture and information ecosystems. Twice as many women under 30 say that they consider TikTok their favorite source of news and information compared to young men. While young men are twice as likely to call YouTube their favorite source of news and information compared to young women, the poll shows. The poll also outlines differences in priorities. The largest share of young men, 31%, say the economy matters most to them right now, while the top issue chosen by the largest share of Gen Z women, 22%, is threats to democracy. The share of Gen Z women who say abortion is their top issue, 16%, is more than double any other age range. Meanwhile, 4% of Gen Z men say abortion is the most important issue to them. There is a wider gap, also, between Gen Z men and women than in other generations on diversity, equity, DEI, with 85% of young women saying such efforts are helpful, compared to 63% of young men who say the same.
Did you hear about, you remember the helicopter crash when Trump first got in office?
Yeah.
They found out the pilot was a DEI hire.
Oh, wow.
It was a woman that, what is it? Apparently, she was given like 3 or 4 direct orders, and since it was from a guy, mm-hmm. she refused to obey any of them.
Wow.
And killed everybody.
Wow. While majorities of Gen Z men and women disapprove of how Trump is handling DEI, young women do so at a much higher level, with 78% disapproving compared to 54% of Gen Z men. And notably, Gen Z also has a wider gender gap compared to older generations on questions about gender issues and roles. More young men, 69%, agree that there are only two genders, while about half, 51% of young women say the same. That chasm is twice as large as the overall gender gap on the question. A higher share of Gen Z men, 72%, than Gen Z women, 56%, say that transgender women should not be able to play female sports.
Well, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Even with hormone replacement, they'll never be fully at the
right at that level that
a regular
yeah.
woman would be.
Yeah. Young men and women also showcased a split on whether the country would be stronger if women held traditional gender roles like homemaking and raising children. 3 in 4 Gen Z women disagreed the country would be stronger if women held traditional roles, with 58% strongly disagreeing. While 59% of Gen Z men also disagree with that sentiment, only a third say they strongly disagree. Huh. Quite interesting. The poll was powered by SurveyMonkey. It was conducted online April 11th to 20 among a national sample of 19,682 adults ages 18 and over. Reported percentages include item non-response and round to the nearest percentage point. The estimated margin of error for this survey among all adults is plus or minus 2.2 percentage points. And there was 20 million questions answered daily on the SurveyMonkey. So there you go, guys. So they're a little more progressive than other generations because they're still agreeing with DEI policies and things like that.
Thank you. Ridiculous.
But Gen A will probably be very different.
I mean, all right. So I would say there's always been racism either on one racial spectrum or the other. Black people are racist. White people can be racist. Asians, I hear, are really racist. But, you know, that's just, you know, not all Asians are racist. Not all black people are racist. Not all white people. And just insert your ethnicity there.
All right.
But
go ahead.
Since everyone, you know, civil rights and all that, and people started getting equal rights, really everything after that's been on your own. If they say black crime's up, why is black crime up? They have all the same rights that everyone else has. What's causing that?
Right.
Is it rap music telling you that it's cool to get high and shoot up? I don't know. Not all rap songs, but mainly rap songs now are about what did I buy today? I bought a car. You know, but you know, a lot of it, there's something deeper than just, oh, you didn't give him the job because he wasn't the right person for the job. Even though he's black. Why don't you give him the job? Because he doesn't know how to fly a plane.
Right.
But he's black. Can you not see, man?
Right.
Like, yeah, he can't fly the plane. He can't right. be a pilot.
Right.
This other guy went to school to do nothing but fly planes.
Right, absolutely.
Well, he should get the job. But he's not black.
Right. You want to put face
fade
on?
Nothing you do makes sense to me. Go ahead and hire your school-educated pilot.
He should go in like a black suit or something. Like a black, I don't know.
He's wearing a black suit. That's close.
They have those, I don't know, that Reiner, like, you basically, if you basically put a black man's face over you, like a mask over yours, and you can't tell, they use it for, like, cross-dressers and shit. But you could totally just get a black, like, I am now.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah, you could do that. That'd
be
the craziest
shit. You went up to someone
shit.
And said something crazy. You're making ramen noodles. You're not Asian. You're white. But I like ramen noodles.
Right.
But that's a cultural appropriation. Don't you know that Asians had the handle on ramen noodles long before the white man took it?
Now, I'm going to be absolutely honest with you, dude. There's probably nothing Asian about ramen noodles. Ramen in general.
Ramen in
general. But
is,
not the actual...
Not the store-bought
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
No. But, yeah, the white man took it.
But they do have special Asian versions of the ramen noodles, which are actually pretty good.
Japanese. I went to ramen. Ramen shops are all over Japan.
Oh, I know that.
And ramen shops, they got one in the big...
I learned that for Persona. You could get a beef bowl. No. All right.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh,
I like the curry broth they make.
Oh, it's good stuff. Blackie Lawless says censorship is worse now than it was in the 80s. Calls Donald Trump a winner. Is there a Japanese place up in town, up there? In,
yeah.
Oh, we need to go there then. I'd like to go
there. That's what I told you. I got
go
there.
Because we're...
got a Japanese restaurant, and then they have a ramen.
Thinking about going house. To see the Thunderbolts tomorrow, depending on how things go, because it looks like it's going to be good, and it's got a lot of good
it
reviews.
It looks like it'll be good.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be fun. And hopefully we go to the Japanese place. That would be cool, because I haven't had Japanese
see
food in a long
time.
See
what the hours are. That would be
yeah,
the
we'll thing. Have to check it out. But all right, guys, this is our last article. And then after that, we're done. We'll try to throw. I know you guys missed our show. We didn't do one yes last time, but we decided.
Wacky,
to do...
but he's white. Can't you see?
No, that's
maybe
pretty
he's lawless,
funny.
But that don't make him black.
So Blackie Lawless, the frontman of Wasp, says censorship is worse now than it was in the 80s. Calls Donald Trump a winner. Now,
Blackie
a little thing about
like a racial
Blackie
terror.
Lawless hey, is Blackie. He started out making one of the most offensive hardcore bands, and then he became Christian, and he started out putting a lot of songs out, you know, religious. Now, he still wants to do his classic stuff, but he definitely has a lot of songs that are religious now that he's since released. He also did a song called Goodbye America, which you definitely need to hear.
Yeah.
In a new interview with Main Campos of Chili's Hefefonia, Blackie Lawless of Wasp, whose single Animal Fuck Like a Beast, I love that song, landed at number 9 on the PMRC, Parents Music Resource Center, Filthy 15, 40 years ago. Damn, that was 1985. Spoke about the importance of free speech. He said as transcribed by Blabbermouth.net. Quite honestly, I think censorship is worse now than it was in the 80s because with the internet, you have people that are just afraid to speak. Censorship is an ugly thing because the idea of freedom of speech, it's not to protect popular speech. It's designed to protect unpopular speech, he explained. And I don't care what anyone has to say. They can come up with the craziest ideas they want. I have enough faith in my fellow man that they will determine what's bullshit and what's not. And you give people the ability to decide the majority of the time, they're going to come up with the right ideas. So like I said, I don't think that trying to limit speech in any way has ever been a good idea. Asked if he thinks social media is a democratic way for people to express themselves or a platform for cancel culture and polarized views, he said, well, it's both. But from what I see, I don't spend a lot of time there, so I really don't know a lot about it. But from what I hear, the concept of being able to cancel people, that's a scary thought. If you have someone like me, I don't care what you say about me, I just don't care, he said. But the majority of the world is not like that. They're very sensitive to what other people think. And so someone like that would be easy to cancel. Someone like myself, you cannot cancel us because we don't care. You can only cancel someone if they care. If I believe in something that I'm doing, I don't care if somebody believes it or not. What's important is that is what I think. And I've spent my career telling our fans, the only thing that really matters is to think for yourself. Come up with your own ideas. Come up with your own opinions. Don't listen to what someone next to you is telling you. Yes, you can listen. But at the end of the day, you have to decide what is right for you. And that's really, really important. Like I said, I spent my entire career talking about this one idea. So the concept of censorship definitely fits into this. Asked about his comment from a couple of decades ago where he expressed his interest in becoming a U.S. senator, he said, at the time, I was pretty passionate. But I think I can say more making records for a longer period of time than I could have been if I would have went to Washington. So I made the right decision staying where I am because my voice has spoken louder for a longer period of time than if I would have gone there and done that. Asked if he's disappointed in politics today, he said, yeah, because you know the old expression, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there's a lot of truth to that. It's all about money and power. That's what politics is. And I'm the kind of person, I don't do well in environments where people are not allowed to speak truth. I just don't do well there. So I'm way better off doing what I'm doing now because I can say the things I want to say without restriction. Because I say politics is the art of compromise, and I don't do well when it comes to compromise. Pressed about whether he changed his mind a bit about rock and roll's ability to change the world, he said, not at all. Because if you look back at the 60s and 70s, rock and roll helped win the war. Anytime you get people to listen to ideas, that's a powerful thing. And that's one of the reasons that rock and roll has scared people, because it's dangerous. Because it's dangerous, because of the ideas it talks about. And that's what's made it revolutionary. And that's what rock and roll is missing today. I wish there was more of that, because when it was truly revolutionary, it was something to fear. If you were someone that did not agree with it, and I miss that today. It's true! Toward the end of the interview, Lawless was asked to describe a U.S. President, Donald Trump, in one word. He responded, a winner. Last November, Blackie defended his decision to praise Trump during the band's concert in New York City, saying the then U.S. president-elect was a patriot who was willing to die for what he believed in. Yeah. Let's see. There's really not a whole lot. Okay. He does say the very First Amendment of our Constitution guarantees freedom of speech, Blackie added. Our founding fathers were genius enough to know that if you can control speech, you can control thought. And these men knew this. These were great men. Fast forward a couple hundred years, 250 almost. Now we have a situation in the last 6-8 years, we find censorship again rearing its ugly, ugly head. Now this time it's on the internet, and it's affecting every single one of us. Yep. Referencing the fact that Trump was making his return to Madison Square the same night, visiting New York City Landmark Arena for a UFC event, he said, "Tonight you may not be aware, but right next door to us over there in the garden, there's a man who has undergone attempt after attempt assassinations on his life. And this man stood up for this country. He's right next door now at that garden. Now I got two things that I'm passionate about the most. One of them is freedom of speech," he added. "And another one is being a patriot. Because I'm here to tell you, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you need to be part of this country. I'm willing to die for this country. I believe in it that much. And that man next door, he believes in it too. I only got one more thing to say before we go, because I'm blind in Texas." And then they did a Blind in Texas song. And in another one, what we did and what we said Saturday night, it wasn't just about him. It was about America. And we knew before we did it because we waited the idea back and forth a week before we did it. What would we do if there was going to be fallout? And I said, well, it doesn't matter if there's fallout because you see big tech censorship. It's the same thing we were going through 40 years ago. It's just got a different name on it now. That's all. So the first thing any government does when they seize power is they seize the airwaves. Because we know that if you can censor speech, you can control thought eventually. We see it time after time. He says, or even if you don't control the thought to the degree you like, you cower people so that they're like little rabbits hiding in the corner. They're afraid to speak out. So that was the big reason behind it. But looking at someone who's willing to go through what this guy did, well, I mean, I heard somebody say yesterday he's got big brass wings. And I thought, yep, that's very true, because Thomas Jefferson said the tree of liberty must be replaced from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. You've heard it many times on TFM's show, though on those on MGTOW.TV, listening to me. And I see him as a patriot. And when I was saying what I was saying the other night, there's two things I was interested in, which was censorship, and patriotism. So if somebody's willing to die for what they believe in, I got to stand there with them. He said, speaking about how he was affected by his experience with PMRC, we were too young to understand what it was all about. But they quickly put us in the eye of the hurricane, and then all kinds of bad things started happening. Death threats and getting shot at in that. We became educated very quickly. He said, I think it was Indiana. This girl came in to interview me, he continued. This was 87, and she worked for the PMRC at one point. And she, at this time I was talking to her, she was a journalist. And she brought in a cassette tape, and she goes, I got something you need to hear. And she played this cassette tape for me. And on it were Susan Baker, co-founder of the PMRC, and a few of the others talking about what their real motivation was. And their motivation was not to get stickers on records. Their motivation was to get Al Gore a platform to then run for president of the United States. So they were trying to create a political profile for him. Because what better way to get attention if you're a political candidate, a Southern caricature, which is what he was, what better way to get attention than to go after an attention getter? I mean, this is McCarthyism, you know. It's no different. Richard Nixon did it.
He discovered Man Bear Pig. Why is he not
all president? All these witch hunts that went on in D.C. for years, but they came to a generation who's not heard it. So this thing comes around once every 15 years. The generation hasn't heard it. They haven't heard the same old lies that come out of it. So it sounds pretty damn good to him because it sounds sincere and genuine. Also, he has reportedly stated in interviews that he's returned to the Christian faith and considers himself a born-again Christian. Let me tell you something about free speech. I'm part Jewish and I'm part Native American Indian. You can stand on a soapbox and you talk about how wonderful Nazism is and how you'd like to kill all the Indians out there. I don't care. I really do not fucking care. That's why, as much as I don't like seeing, you know, as much as I don't like, you know, there's guys on the X, they'll talk about the, I mean, they don't say black people. They, you know, they use quite a different word. And they also talk about the Jews constantly.
What word is
and,
that?
And,
What word?
We're not gonna say that one.
Is it a hard R?
It might. Yeah, they use that. You use that. They use that hard R a lot over there on X, and I don't care for that kind of language. But at the same time, I don't really care. Now,
I'll defend their right.
Yeah,
to say
yeah,
it.
I'll defend their right,
you know,
to say it.
So I don't agree with them.
I don't care.
All.
I don't care with that either. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Yeah, because I think there's a difference between words and actions. Oh, if yeah, you're going to say stuff on the internet, say whatever the fuck you want. But if you're going to go up to somebody and you're going
laws.
To do that, then you and they knock you in the mouth, yeah. Then you probably deserve it.
Probably had it coming.
Yeah.
Now, there are laws. You can't yell
fire
in the crowd
in the theater.
Yep. You can't go up to someone like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, you can't
they
do that.
Shoot you.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that'd be it.
I was defending my life.
Right.
He said he's going to kill me.
Right, absolutely. I don't, let me rephrase that. I do care, but I don't want to limit your ability to speak. Because if I do that, then we start going down a dark road because you start playing umpire. And then who plays umpire tomorrow? Country was built as a republic, as TFM has said many times. Contrary to what a lot of people don't understand, it's not a democracy. But what you have to do to create a republic is you have to have a certain amount of faith in the people. So in other words, if you have a guy that's spewing a bunch of hatred on a street corner in a soapbox, you have to have faith in your fellow Americans that the guy is a lunatic and that the vast majority of people are going to find him out and not follow him. But what happens is you start limiting that speech, and then, like I said, you take away the ability of people to decide for themselves. Number one, who's crazy and who isn't. But even more dangerous than that, you start appointing these umpires that tell you what you can say and what you can't. And it's extremely dangerous. And you've heard it a million times, but it bears repeating. Our system is not set up for popular speech. It is set up for unpopular speech.
Yes.
Let's see. And he said, you want to talk about sensationalism? This was an organization that didn't see, excuse me, that was seeking a platform that would help serve its own political interests. They didn't give a damn about censorship. I spent the better part of my career trying to get people to understand that. This really is not what you think it is. They come to you like the wolf in sheep's clothing and then use you to create a frenzy. Not unlike what McCarthy did with the communists and Bob Dole did with rap. This is nothing new. You don't have to be Nostradamus to see what's going on with young people these days, he continued. Parents just don't get involved with their kids as much as they used to. Again, parents just don't get involved with their kids as much as they used to. Are you going to tell me that these parents at Columbine didn't know that anything was going on with their kids? Hey, my mother knew what I was doing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But parents now, they don't want to take any responsibility for the children. They bring somebody into this world, and then when something goes wrong, they want to blame everybody else for it. It's not clear what Lawless thinks about Trump's supposed commitment to free expression, seeing as Trump champions freedom of speech for himself and his allies while attacking it. Oh, that's a personal, I'm not going to do that. We're not going to talk about that. He added that. That's not even
what?
Necessary. Okay, so listen to what this writer added, by the way. Let's not attack him. It doesn't even have the writer's name. Sure doesn't. I don't see a writer's name.
He feels safe behind that nut. No name.
But it says, it's not clear what Lawless thinks about Trump's supposed commitment to free expression, seeing as Trump champions freedom of speech for himself and his allies, while attacking it when he protects his critics and political opponents. Trump has regularly attacked individual journalists and the press in general for unfavorable news coverage. He called journalists the enemy of the people and removed ones he did not like from press events and rallies.
There's a difference between unfavorable and flat-out lying. Because everything that they've accused him of, if you play the full tape, you know, 5 seconds later, it's obvious that they were full of shit. They're chopping it up to match their narrative.
Right.
That's like January 11th, where they said, he said, you gotta fight like hell. But he said we have to march peacefully and patriotically. They took that out. You listen like 5 seconds more, it's a whole different sentence. or a whole different paragraph anyway.
Anyway, okay, so here we go. We got one thought for you. Just a thought. This isn't really a... Why everyone on the internet is talking about 100 men and a gorilla?
First you talk about race, and then you bring the gorilla into this.
Oh, this is really short. We can actually go through this. With Elon Musk, Mr. Beast, and more jumping in the debate. They're going ape over this topic. Could 100 men take on a silverback gorilla and win? That's a hypothetical question that's setting social media alight, inspiring raging debates, AI-generated simulations, and even prompting celebrities to weigh in on this ludicrous interspecies matchup. The bananas discussion was originally sparked after user Dream Chess and Mike posited on X that 100 men could beat one gorilla if everybody was dedicated to the task. The post was amassed over 270 million views over the time of writing and spawned countless replies from commenters, many of whom ridiculed the poster over his outlandish-seeming assertion. No matter how dedicated you are, all 100 of you will meet your maker after very violent and vicious deaths.
It's only
one
fighting,
naysayer.
Right?
My yes.
Because I was saying, we've already won the battle. They're all in zoos and shit.
May God be with you all. I won't be joining in, unfortunately.
Now, muscle fibers and all that are way different in chimpanzees, gorillas, and other ape-like animals.
Me and the homies are going to fight the gorilla, but wearing suits to make the funerals easier, quipped another mixed mammal arts expert. Others reposted footage of two massive silverback gorillas ferociously brawling at the zoo to prove that Harambe would likely pound all 100 human opponents into putty. Other skeptics alluded to the unparalleled physical prowess of Fighty Joe Young. According to Prime Safaris, an adult male silverback gorilla can weigh up to 450 pounds and lift up to 27 times their body weight, making them
one at a time. Come on now.
Stronger than 20 adult humans combined. They've also been known to tear down banana trees and bend iron bars to escape their enclosures. Damn, I wonder exactly. I mean,
you know, they have one of the smallest penises for.
That's an AI simulation. It's all wrong because they're attacking each other. And it's not just the simian suplex that we need to fear. Despite their herbivorous diet, gorillas boast a bite force of 1,300 pounds per square inch, around twice that of a lion. Some online digital wizards even generated epic simulations of how this hypothetical gorilla-human grudge match might go. Most ended with the primatological pugilist flattening all 100 opponents with ease, like King Kong with the villagers and the eponymous 1933 flick. However, there was a couple of online conspiracy theorists who, like an uncle after several PBRs at the barbecue, believed that the humans might not get decimated by Donkey Kong. I mean, y'all gotta jump him. First group of 50 goes, 10 each hold a limb, the remaining 10 punching and stomping that hoe. The last 50 just back up in case y'all can't get it done. They gotta practice in the park for 2 weekends straight, and they got it. 100 people equals 400 hands and feet who believe that this number of humans could take out an elephant. I don't know. An elephant now.
I don't know, yeah.
That's an elephant. Interestingly, when the Post ran the matchup past ChatGPT, they responded that 100 men could almost certainly overpower a single silverback gorilla, but with extreme difficulty, serious injuries, and likely fatalities among the humans involved. The gorilla could incapacitate or kill dozens before being overwhelmed through sheer attrition, they wrote. Eventually, the group could subdue the gorilla through sustained effort and numbers. However, both ChatGPT and ex-commenters theorized that untrained civilians could panic and perhaps even flee after seeing a few of their compatriots get eviscerated by an angry gorilla. Think of it more like a mob trying to bring down a rampaging tank with their bare hands, GPT explained. YouTube superstar Mr. Beast, real name Jimmy Donaldson, even offered perhaps ingest to settle the debate in real life, writing on X. Need 100 men to test this. Any volunteers? Sure. What's the worst that could happen? Responded ex-owner Elon Musk. Donaldson was subsequently ripped by PETA, who questioned the ethics of holding human-on-animal gladiator bouts in 2025. 100 men versus a gorilla? Maybe try 100 reasons to leave animals out of your content instead, they wrote. The gorilla would lose, despite its overwhelming physical strength, because of its mind. The gorilla would not understand the situation it found itself in. Its instincts would cause it to retreat and assume a defensive posture when faced with 100 aggressive men instead of being 100% offensive and systematically attempting to kill or disable all 100 men. If it had the body of a gorilla and the mind and understanding of a human, it might prevail.
PETA stands for pitiful.
Apparently you can test this theory on a carnival cruise. Didn't this just happen on a carnival ship and they landed on the no sailing list?
No sailing?
No sailing!
Yeah, I can't sail to beat a silverback gorilla? Why not?
I don't know.
PETA's blocking the gates.
I don't know. Okay, well...
The only thing PETA's good for is tricking women into posing nude for...
Animals.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Animal don't give a shit.
That's all we've got for this time. Of course, there's several more articles. You see them all lined up. Some of these are real old. The ones that don't... That are messed up, they're older articles. I'll get to them eventually. But... At any rate, guys, this is the Grim Lord, and we will see you guys next time with more great articles. I am out.
Later.